The night may be long and the dark may be deep, but the answers are there to be found. Whether it's the normal, the abnormal, or the paranormal, you're in the right place. Let's go beyond reality.
Welcome to the program, everyone. Great to have you all along as we start another week. I know last night was the official beginning of the week for us, but we ran a pre-recorded. That's not a pre, it was a best of show. I don't remember the date of that, but it was a great show. Rick Wagner is a very interesting guy. In fact, listening to it last night, I really want to get him back on the show, so I've reached out to him. Hopefully we can get him back. I'd like to revisit that conversation. Some pretty cool stuff going on there. I do want to remind people, if you're a Twitch subscriber and you used your Amazon Prime account to subscribe for free to the JV Johnson Twitch channel, that has to be renewed every month. It only lasts for a month, and then you have to just do it again. So I noticed a few subscriptions dropped off, and I'm assuming that's what happened, that some people use their Amazon Prime account, and it just has to be renewed. Very easy to do, just like you did it the first time. And go ahead and do that. We want to get those subscription numbers up. So thank you for doing that. And also, same thing with YouTube. YouTube is a great platform for us. We've got a great following there. And if you're listening to the show as a podcast, you want to find the YouTube channel. Just be part of our community there. Go to YouTube and subscribe. It's just JV Johnson. It's actually JV Johnson's Beyond Paranormal, but you can find it by searching for JV Johnson. We've got enough of a presence that it comes up pretty quickly. We've got like 600, 500, I don't know. I throw numbers out, but I know it's over 500, maybe close to 600 back episodes of the program there. And everyone is entitled to watch those. There's no fee or anything. We encourage people to take advantage of those back episodes, plus some bonus content that's there as well. And the podcast, by the way, is a great way to listen to the show. It allows you to subscribe and have everything downloaded to your phone automatically, so you don't have to even think about it. It's right there for you. So as soon as we post the podcast version of the show, which is usually the next morning, the morning after the live broadcast, it's there for you in case you missed it. And then if you didn't miss it, well, you don't have to listen to that podcast version. You can just wait for the next one. So you can find the podcast on all major podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. Look for Beyond Reality Paranormal. Please support the program. Go to patreon.com/johaw. That's J-O-H-A-W. As I mentioned earlier, when I couldn't get a hold of our original guest that was scheduled for tonight, Devin Hunter, Slick Eddie was having trouble getting responses. We contacted a friend of ours and a friend of a friend. Of course, you know Joshua Warren's a great guest here on the show, Christian McLeod, and scheduled him to come on in place of Devin. But then Devin ended up contacting us, said he was all set. So we rescheduled Christian to come on Thursday night. And as you know now, and as we all know now, Devin, although he was set, was not ready for the program tonight because he had an issue. So we were fortunate enough to go back to Christian here and get him on tonight. And I think we're going to have him here tonight and then also continue our conversation on Thursday night. But Christian, thanks so much for being available. Such a last-minute thing here. You're bailing me out quite a bit. But I also know you have a lot of really interesting things to talk about. So I'm excited to have you on.
Well, I'm thrilled to be on. Thank you so much for having me. And as a Blondie fan, there's nothing wrong with having little Debbie Harry on.
Exactly. I mean, her parents, up until very recently, owned a little shop on Main Street here in Cooperstown, which is where I live. And, she's kind of a local hero. I don't think she's been back since she became popular, but hey, a lot of people do. A lot of people make
it. You know what's funny is I remember seeing a documentary on Blondie, like how they started CBGB's.
Yep.
And then, like, they showed a picture of Debbie Harry in her, I think it was Coopertown or Cooper's high school band uniform.
Oh, really?
And it's just kind of funny because you see her, and then 3 years later, she's Blondie.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And it just kind of makes, it was actually kind of cool. I just remembered that out of the blue.
Thank you
for having me. That's just the way, sometimes fortune favors the foolish, and I am pretty foolish. So here we are.
I don't know about foolish, but you've certainly been accommodating. We had another instance here where we were trying to get you to fill in, and I don't remember what happened with that particular time, but it didn't work out. And then today, and here you are. So, I'm not that familiar with your work, and I haven't had a chance to study up on what we were going to talk about Thursday night, but I know that you, you've studied cryptids and you studied paranormal phenomena, and you are, I believe, in the Asheville, North Carolina area, right?
Yes, I am. I live in Asheville, North Carolina, and I'm the director of the Asheville Cryptid and Paranormal Society. And we're also starting a newer branch of that right now, and it's going to be the American Cryptid and Paranormal Society. And I'll tell you, the truth of the matter is, when we started, we did, I guess you could say, underground research and investigation for years. And the reason why we never really came out and publicly stated, you know, we do this and that, and simply because, well, there was two reasons. One, of course, the ridicule. You don't want your name synonymous with, oh, look, there's the Bigfoot guy, or there's the ghost guy, or there's the guy, you know, Spooky McCloud. That was a nickname I got in college when I was finishing up my master's. And so I always kind of kept it on the low, if you will. But it's actually kind of an interesting story on why I decided to start my own investigation organization. I was having, as you know, we have a very good friend in common. I don't know if I can use his name on air. Is that going to be an issue?
I don't think so, not unless you're in prison.
No. You know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the Wizard of Weird himself, the one, the only Joshua P. Warren.
Of course, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's a dear friend. He's a brother. I love the guy to death. Wouldn't be doing this without him, to be honest with you. And we used to talk all the time, and he would say, you know, he tried to convince me to go out and, you know, be more vocal about the things I've researched and the information I've gathered. And my biggest thing, to be honest with you, is I never wanted to be that guy that didn't have the credibility. You know what I'm saying?
Like,
when you see these guys with their, you know, that are on the TV shows, and they look like, you know, they've been wearing the same clothes for 10 years and there's no, you know, cognitive responses in their questioning. I never wanted to be listed as one of those. Does that make sense? I'm not trying to offend anyone.
Sure,
that
makes sense.
I always wanted my cryptid research and my paranormal research to be taken seriously. And one thing that I thought that could bring credibility to the whole cryptid paranormal, and I just use cryptid as an undiscovered life form. That's any kind of life form. I consider aliens cryptids, so I'm just using it as a blanket term, if you will.
Okay, so let me just make sure I understand. When you use the term cryptid, you're talking about any kind of any life form that isn't necessarily cataloged.
Cataloged or discovered or openly admitted to existing.
Yeah. Right? So therefore,
Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster, Dogman, and again, I put aliens in that category simply because, in my opinion, and this is just my opinion, they're an undiscovered life form. That's how we do it in our realm.
What if some people think aliens are interdimensional? Some people think that Bigfoot is interdimensional. Do they still qualify as cryptids if they turn out to be interdimensional?
I suppose they would. I have to. This is where Josh and I always disagree. I have no problem with leaving maybe a 2% margin of error that Bigfoot could be interdimensional. It's just I'm not buying that. I think he's an undocumented North American wood ape.
Okay.
That's my personal belief on that.
That's fair.
And as far as interdimensional, could there be interdimensional aliens? Of course. That to me could be, you know, that's a possibility. And then, you know, you go to string theory and all these different possible Earths or things like that. Of course, you know, that realm of possibility is over there. But in my personal, you know, mantra, I don't think that any cryptids are interdimensional that we speak of frequently, like, you know, again, Dogman, Sasquatch, the Lizard Man, things like that.
Chupacabra, Jersey Devil.
That's just my personal take on it.
Right.
I've had reports in the past where people say, well, you know, these footprints just disappeared. And then, you know, you get to talking to them, and the first thing I ask, were there a lot of trees around? Oh, yeah, there's trees all over the place. Well, you know, then in my opinion, if it is a Bigfoot, I firmly believe they're very good in the trees and they can go from the ground to the tree tops pretty quickly. So that's always been my experiences. There's always been some kind of explanation as to where they could have gone. But, you know, some people, I've had other reports where, like, you know, these footprints went to the side of a cliff and then they disappeared. Well, was it possible to climb the cliff? Oh, yeah, probably. But, you know, it's just things like that. And every case is always situational, you know, and that's why I never want to be one of the guys to say, oh, that's impossible. Because, you know, we're dealing with the impossible all the time. I mean, is it, if you ask the average person if they believe in Bigfoot, they're probably going to say, oh, that's impossible. Or are aliens possible? You know, I think I just saw a poll that 65% of Americans believe the aliens are real now. I think that was what it was.
I think that's the number somewhere around there. And I think what you find, and maybe this is your experience as well, but I think what I have found is that everybody, you know, you'll get all sorts of people denying something, whether it's flat earth, whether it's Bigfoot, mm-hmm. whether it's ghosts, whether it's aliens, whatever. But every one of those people has one thing that they'll say, well, I'm not so sure about that. That I think is real. So, you know, everybody can doubt a whole bunch of things. But then again, almost everybody has at least one thing that they may defy logic with, if that's the way to put it. They may.
And you're right. You're very right. But that one thing opens up the door for all these other things.
Well, that's the key. That's the key. If they can put, you know, they can suspend their disbelief for a moment to believe in this one thing, why is it so hard for them to do it with all these other things? At least have an open mind about it.
Because it's the way, you know what? It's the way they perceive reality. You know, my training is, you know, I was a very scientific method kind of guy.
Right.
And that's how I apply that to the way I do my research. When we do paranormal investigations, 9 times out of 10, if we're getting called in to investigate something, it's usually to debunk it. And, you know, this is something I say a lot when I do my tours and things like that. 99.9% of all alleged paranormal / supernatural activity can be explained. However, there's that little 0.01%, that little area I call the X-Files. That's where we are. And sometimes you can move that 0.01 as a standard deviation either way to the right or left to make it good in your favor, but it can't be explained either way. And that's where you have the real questions. What is it? How did it happen? Is it going to come back? What made it happen? You know, and that's where the questions really start, because what did you see? You know, what was going on when you saw it? You know, did you feel fear? Did you feel contempt? Was there a terrifying presence? You know, things like that. And that's where we start to dig in and really do our investigations. That's how we get that baseline. So if we have another report that's similar, we ask the same kind of questions. So we try to always do we always try to get a baseline first, and then we'll start asking the real obscure, strange questions. And sometimes those obscure, strange questions are where you get the real information, particularly when you're doing cryptid investigations, because sometimes the cryptid stuff is the weird, the really weird out there stuff, because it's just not explainable. And that's just kind of what we do. And what our organization does, Asheville Cryptid and Paranormal Society, is we try to help people. We don't charge anything. If someone calls and asks us and says, hey, we're having some issues on our property, you can come take a look at this, and we find evidence that may indicate that there could be some kind of cryptid activity, we try and help them. We try and help them out as far as giving them some advice on what could deter them, what could you know, make them not want to come around, things like that. We're definitely in the no-kill. There's a lot of cryptid researchers out there that think that they need to kill something or bring it in.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's a fool's errand. And if I may be so bold, that is – and here's why I think that's just ridiculous. One, let's just say you get a group out there we'll just call them a bunch of Rudy Earls. We get some Rudy Earls out there, and they
go out
hunting Bigfoot.
What do you call them?
Rudy Earls.
I have never heard that word. I don't even know what that word is.
That's just my little nickname for the guy.
How do you
like
spell that word? Is there a spelling?
And they go out and basically kill a Bigfoot. Okay, and I'm a firm believer Bigfoots are real. I think there's a breeding population. I think there's a whole lot more of them than what most people realize. And let's just say they go out and kill one. Well, if they actually think they're going to get that body out of the woods or the forest or wherever, that's impossible. The other thing is, if you don't think there's going to be some kind of organization all over you in about a half hour, you're insane.
Okay, so there's a whole bunch of things you just said there. I'm assuming that the first point you made about... First of all, before I ask the question, I just want to clarify a couple things. I got some people asking some questions in chat. We originally were scheduled to talk about Modern Witch tonight with Devin Hunter. Devin had a last-minute conflict. We are now talking with Christian McLeod, and we're talking about his paranormal investigations, research, and experience. So I just want everybody to be clear on that if people are looking for a discussion about witchcraft. That won't be tonight. Anyway.
I know a little bit about witchcraft, but not enough to get me in trouble. So, I mean, I could, well, we've got, I can defer on that.
We've got plenty of other things to talk about. And I want to clarify two points you just made. When you said, if this group of people went out into the woods and actually encountered a Bigfoot and killed it, you said the likelihood that they'll make it out of the woods is slim. Do you mean because other Bigfoot creatures would stop them?
That's one reason. Yes.
And then the second point you made, and then
the first Jurassic Park.
Yeah, hold on a second. And then the second point you made was if they were lucky enough to get out of the woods with the body, that they would be descended on by, I'm not even sure what word you used, but basically what you implied was government agencies.
I never used the word government.
You didn't, but that was the impression I got. Is that what you were talking about?
That is the impression I was trying to give you.
Yeah. Yeah. So you believe two things, though, that are very, very important, which may explain why this has been so elusive. One is that the Bigfoot population wouldn't let you take a body out. And secondly, if you were lucky enough to do that, you would have some type of Men in Black type intervention that would prevent you from doing what you were trying to do anyway. So the odds are stacked against you pretty much.
I don't think it'd be, I honestly don't think it would happen. I think one or the other would get you. I'm a firm believer, unless there's a lot of Bigfoot theories about rogue males. Everyone seems to think they run in family members, or they run in family packs, or and there's always an alpha male. And if you get just hypothetically, you get a deposed alpha male and he's older, and maybe he's injured and he can't run as fast, or he can't capture food as easy as he used to, and he goes rogue and maybe he attacks some people, something happens, hypothetically. And or he's seen, and a group of what I like to call Rudy Earls go out there and they shoot him. All right. That might be a circumstance in which there would be no other retaliation from the members of the tribe. But that would be rare, in my opinion. What I think, and again, this is just what I think, and I can't prove this, my friend. This is just my research and just my own deductions over the last 24 years of research that I've been doing on this. I think that what would happen is if you did kill one, or if anyone did kill one, they tend to run in groups, and you might see that one there, but you don't see the four or five that are surrounding you.
And would those four or five scoop up the body of the one that was killed and run off with it? Is that what you're thinking?
So
you wouldn't be able
to
find the body.
I believe they would.
Yeah. Because we don't have don't have many stories of people that have actually claimed to have killed one and been in possession of the body and then had it stolen from them from an other Bigfoot creatures, right? I don't know of any stories.
I know of one. Once I heard, well, actually, to say this and give it the proper amount of time and analogy, we have to understand that in my belief system and in the belief system of different people, there's basically four different types of Bigfoot. Now, the first one would be the Patty type, and by mean Patty type, that would be from the Patterson-Gimlin film, and that's usually the largest one with the big conical head. I'm talking about. Yep. You remember Patty?
Sure, of course.
Okay, that would be Patty. Patty types tend to be the biggest, but they also tend to be the most intelligent. In other words, usually if they see people, they're the first ones out of there. And these are also the same type Sasquatch. Like if you hear that there was a kid lost in the woods and a big furry gorilla helped them get to his tent, that's usually a Patty type. Okay. They tend to be non-aggressive. They're not cannibalistic. There's no real bad violence associated with them. Mm-hmm. There can be, but there usually isn't. The type twos are more like your chimpanzee types. Now, these are the types that are highly aggressive. They're not as big as the Patty types. Patty type can be anywhere from 7 to 10 foot tall.
Okay.
You usually get reports for type twos. They're around 8 to 9 footers. I mean, that's still huge and massive, but they're not as big
seven,
as Patty
types. 7 to 10 and 8 to 9 are kind of all the same there, isn't it? It's pretty close. I mean,
The 10 foot males usually get bigger, but, you know, the females tend to be, you know, and that's just the reports we've gotten. Again, this is all just based on reports that have been given to us over the years.
Okay.
So there's you know, you have to, I don't want to see suspension of disbelief, but there has to be like a standard error that you kind of have to build in. Because I've had a report of a Patty type, I didn't take this personally. It was told to me secondhand that there was a researcher in Alaska that recorded an alleged 14-foot type one. And
14,
I just can't even imagine that.
14 feet tall?
Yes.
Wow.
And about 7 feet wide. I mean, that's just massive. So
that
is
monstrous. Even more so.
That is a monster. I mean, that you might as well be King Kong at that point.
Yeah, pretty close.
But like I said, the type twos, they tend to be more aggressive. And then, you know, you have your type threes, which I'm not a big believer in the type threes. Some people think type threes would be what you call the dog man or the beast of seven shoots, but they tend to be plantigrade. They have a plantigrade foot, like the type ones and the type twos, but they have an elongated snout. They kind of look baboonish.
Okay.
They're also, you know, and different Native American tribes have different names for them. Some are Janosqua, some are called Gugwees, things like that. So that would be like your type three, and your type four would be what you'd call a relenic hominid.
How tall are the type threes?
Again, the type threes, they're about 8 to 9. Again, it depends. A lot of it's regional. Usually, the higher they are up north, the bigger they tend to run, much like bears. When I was doing my research, I tried to correlate a lot of habits that bears have with cryptids, with the exception of the hibernation, simply because of the size. Because my thought process for that was, if this, you know, 500-pound black bear or you know, 400-pound black bear needs the X amount of calories, and then you extrapolate, say, it's a 1,200-pound North American primate, so he's going to need triple that, you know, where would this guy go? And then maybe you can find an area that would be suitable for a primate of that size. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. One of the things I'm trying to determine here, are you suggesting that reports of a creature that has been called dog man or canine man? I mean, there've been some different names used for. Are you suggesting that's a Bigfoot?
Cynocephali.
Are you suggesting that's a Bigfoot creature?
No, quite the opposite, my friend. I'm blatantly saying that's a whole different creature.
Oh, okay.
I have seen a dog man.
You have
twice.
Oh,
I have physically seen a dog man twice, and I assure you that is a whole different ball game. That is a different creature, and totally. I believe that's an offshoot of something called the Cynocephali.
Okay,
and we can talk about that in a minute if
you
want.
We'll see if we want to get to that, because I want to save some of this conversation for when we pick this up on Thursday night too.
Problem.
I don't think we've ever had one guest twice in a week. That's going to be interesting. But
I'm honored. I have to admit, I'm honored. You've earned it. Great time.
So I want to get back to this Bigfoot discussion here,
yes,
because
sir.
You know, one of the problems people have, and when we say that, you know, people should be a little more open-minded when we're having these conversations, at least be willing to listen to the evidence instead of outright dismissing the possible existence of these creatures. But one of the problems that they have, and it's a really difficult one to overcome, and maybe you've got an answer for it, but we can never find any evidence, physical remains of a Bigfoot creature, whether it's a carcass, whether it is a skeleton, a skull, or even just a bone that we, and I know there's been some gray area here about DNA testing, but, you know, that we could, without question, say, this is not from a creature that we can identify yet. It has the right size to be from a skeleton of what we know to be a 10-foot tall creature.
Well, I mean, let's take this at a three-pronged attack here. Let's go back into ancient antiquity, all right? Gigantopithecus roamed the Chinese rainforest for hundreds of thousands of years, yet we only have five or six complete skulls, and most of those are just from jaws, all right? So what happened to their fossil record, all right? We don't know. But here's what I think. And again, this is what I think. I think these creatures have burial rights. Some of them have burial rights. Mm-hmm. In other words, I think if a type one has a member of their tribe and something, let's just say a nefarious act happens to them and they are no longer with us, I think they get buried. I think they have a specific burial right. Now, the type twos, I think that's where you get your cannibalistic histories from. In other words, I have read firsthand reports. I have never taken one. I just want to be clear on the record for that. I've never taken a firsthand report on this, but I have heard secondhand account reports, and I have talked to specific people that are pretty much, if you could use the word expert in a cryptozoological format whereas Bigfoot is involved, this person would be an expert. Now, just for the record, I don't believe there's such a thing as an expert in the paranormal or cryptid world. Because you can't prove anything. I don't want to sound like
I think that's I think that's a healthy
knock at my own organization.
Yeah,
but
no, I think that's a health. I think that's a healthy position to take, Christian. You know, it's the same thing with ghost hunting or whatever. I don't think there can be such a thing as an expert, just because we don't have any solid answers to any questions. We have a lot of theories on all of these things, but we don't have solid, demonstrable answers that you can prove in the scientific method way that could make anybody an expert on any of these topics. There are better thinkers than others who you know have better theories and can support them in better ways, but that doesn't necessarily make them an expert.
No, and that's how when we investigate, I can learn something from anyone. It's, you know, and then again, this is my opinion, but if someone is offering you knowledge and you don't take it, then that's on you. But I can learn something from anyone. And if someone's willing to tell me the things they've encountered and how it happened and why it happened, I want to learn, because that might help me in the future to help someone else. My whole goal is, you know, I'm driven for my own personal reasons, but my deep down, I want to help people, because there are people that are being, I don't want to see plagued or terrorized, but they're having problems, all right, legitimate problems with legitimate phenomena that are not recognized. And I want to help these people. And my organization, that's what we want to do. We want to help people. We're not in it for the money. We don't sell anything. We don't make any money. As a matter of fact, I'll be honest with you, I lose probably $6,000 a year on this, just money, out of my own pocket.
Yeah, money that you just put into the effort to get answers, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all it is. And uh-huh. And you know what? It's a passion. It's what I do. My wife is very well aware of it, you know, and it's just something that I do.
Well,
and
you know,
it's
some
part of me.
Some people play a lot of golf. Some people spend money on, you know, horses or race cars or whatever it happens to be. Yours is a pursuit of knowledge. There's nothing wrong with that.
And that's what, you know, and thank you for saying that, because there's a lot of people out there that, you know, think, oh, you're wasting your time and things like that. I don't see it that way. And you know, I do golf, too. So there's that, too. And I got to throw that in there. But I spend more time in the woods looking for Bigfoot than I do on the greens. And my game shows it, incidentally. But back to the burial rights I was talking about. I'm sorry. Sometimes I get sidetracked because there's just so much. I just like talking about this so much. I think the type twos are the cannibalistic type. And I think what happens is if one of them dies, they eat it. And there was a very interesting report. There's been several, but the one I thought was really interesting. There was a gentleman about 8 years ago in the Pacific Northwest, and he was hunting. And one of type two Bigfoot had located him in a tree and was coming after him. And I think he had a 30-06, and he shot the thing in the head, and it died. But when it hit the ground, the rest of his, I guess what would you call tribe, there was five of them. They came around, they grabbed him, and they immediately started ripping him apart and smashing his remains into trees, into basically turning into pulp and eating it. Now, if that's the case, then that is a good example of why you don't find a whole lot of remains.
Okay, but they wouldn't be able to devour bones that quickly.
No. But if you, I mean, what they do is they literally smash it. They take the body, they rip it apart, and they smash it into trees until it's basically a pulp, and then they consume it.
So then they crush the bones to the point where they can consume the bones. Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Yes. So they basically there's no solidification left. It's basically I guess you could call it a Bigfoot hot dog. I mean that's kind of gross. I was going for gross. I was shock value, brother. That's all I'm trying to do. But that's kind of what they do.
Yeah, but let's
type two and specific to type threes, from what I've been told.
Okay, let's assume for a second that type ones have this burial ritual or whatever, and they bury their dead and they bury it quickly. And let's assume that type twos and type threes do exactly what you just outlined with their dead. We have very, as humans, very specific rules about what you can do with a corpse, with a dead body. And we have burial rituals and we have burial processes. But you still could find, a human skeleton out in the woods. It happens all the time, whether it's from a nefarious act or whether it's from somebody getting lost in the woods and dying alone, or an accident. There are a lot of ways that a human skeleton can be found where it shouldn't be. It seems like we would find one of these for a Bigfoot type creature. Somewhere, somehow, we would stumble upon one. And that's the tough nut to crack, don't you think?
Well, let me ask you. Well, I agree with you, but let me ask you something, my friend. Think about this. Let's just say you and I are out in the woods hunting, and we're good guys. We're stand-up guys. We pay our permits. We wear the right protective clothing, and we stumble upon these remains that we, as just laymen, people that don't have any anthropological experiences, not doctors, the common sense. Let's just say we find a real large set of bones. And we're thinking, hey, that's got to be some big dude. You know what? We need to call the police and get them out there. Well, let's just say an investigator comes out and he sees it, and he calls it in. Do you not think there would be some type of agency that would be alerted to this particular find?
Okay, so then if we're following that logic, then what you're saying here is that, yeah, these things have been found, but they are quickly consumed by whatever dark government forces we're pointing the finger at here. So in other words, if you and I reported it, once the authorities get involved, it's going to disappear.
I believe that.
Okay. Yes. That's
and
a fair position.
Because I honestly believe that. And I can do you one better, because I have a theory about that. If you want me to go into that, I'd be more than happy to, too, because it makes sense. If you look at the historic record on how the United States was basically carved up as far as national park systems, do you remember what particular president did that?
It was Roosevelt.
Exactly. What did Roosevelt write about in his book, The Wilderness Hunter?
That I don't know. We're talking about Teddy Roosevelt, of course.
Yeah, we're talking about Teddy Rex. Teddy Roosevelt was the first one to openly print about the Bauman incident, wherein two hunters in Montana, I believe it was Montana, where his ranch, not too far from off of one of his ranches, one of which was killed by a Bigfoot, and the other one witnessed it and ran. And the guy that told Teddy Rex about this, his name was Bauman, and Teddy believed him so much that he actually put it in his book. Now, I personally think that the government has known about these creatures for years. And I also think they perceive them not as a great threat.
Why would they care? Why would they cover it up? If it's a flesh and blood creature roaming in the woods, why would they cover that up versus anything?
Here's where things get tricky. And again, what I'm about to say is just my opinion. So I don't, I'm a very devout person. I'm a very, you know, spiritual, religious man. So what I'm about to say, you know, I don't want anyone to think I'm being non-Christian. But think about the religious implications if we find that Bigfoot has our DNA and has pretty much the same building blocks as us, and we are indeed his closer relative. Therefore, would you classify it as a subhuman or a human? And if you do that, and then you get the religious principles in there, God made man in his own image. Therefore, by that logic, God made Bigfoot in his own image. So God, man, and Bigfoot are all one now. Do you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, but didn't we
see how the religious implications would get?
Didn't we cross that bridge with evolution to begin with and with, you know,
Not everyone believes in that. That's the difference. So if you do that, then you're going to have to stir up that whole thing. You're going to have a lot of religious issues. Now you're going to have to get to the aspect of, now are they an endangered species, and what do we do with that? So if indeed Bigfoot's an endangered species, and his habitat just happens to be pretty much all the national park systems and the forest around there, what happens to that economic opportunity, the renewable resources of forest, the forestry industry? And how much is that worth to you?
And of course, Christian, I'm playing devil's advocate with a lot of these questions, because these are things that we hear from, you know, other folks who have a lot of doubts about these topics that we talk about, whether they're Bigfoot or aliens or whatever it happens to be. So we like to cover these questions. But tell me, let's back this whole thing up a bit. How did you get started? Where did your interest, particularly in Bigfoot, come from?
Well, good question. When I was a kid, I grew up in northern Appalachia, and my grandfather and my cousin and I went for a walk one day behind our property, and my grandfather was a real cool guy. He was a World War II pilot, and he was just a real neat guy. And after World War II, he spent a year in Alaska, and at that point, the family folklore starts to get a little Irished up. I'll explain that in a minute. But when he came back, he had seen some things, and he never discussed it. Anyway, while my grandfather and my cousin and I were walking in the woods, we saw this massive footprint in the mud. I'll never forget it. You know, I was 5 or 6. I mean, any footprint was big, but this thing was a bare foot. And my grandfather just looked at it, and, you know, the blood drained from his face. And he used to smoke unfiltered cigarettes. I can't remember if they're Camel. I think they were Lucky Strikes. But he used to have it on his lip all the time. You know what I'm talking about? Like, he was one of those guys that could and smoke a cigarette.
Yeah, my dad was one too.
Yeah. And I remember that falling as he's looking at this footprint. And he just grabbed me and my cousin, and he started looking around. And he literally was carrying us under one of us under each arm. And he was walking. He'd stop every 15, 20 feet and just start looking around. And he did this all the way back home. And then he grabbed my dad and my uncles that just happened to be in the kitchen. And he took them in the other room. And being a nosy little brat, I went and eavesdropped. And I remember him asking my dad what size caliber firearms he had. Did he have a 12 gauge loaded? And my dad's like, no, I only have this. And he goes, what the hell's wrong? I remember there was a whole conversation. And the reason I remember that is because I remember my grandfather slapping my dad and my uncle in the back of the head for sassing him. And I just thought it was funny that my dad's dad was straightening him out. I know that sounds kind of corny, but it's one of those few things, you know, those memories you have.
Yeah, these are landmark things that happen in our childhood that really start to establish the foundation from which we build our curiosities and our interests.
Exactly. And I remember him specifically saying, you have a big problem. You have the boss of the woods out there. And I had no idea what that meant, but I remembered hearing the phrase for years afterwards, or I remember the phrase in my head years afterwards. And unfortunately, not too long after that, he died. And I never got to explain this kind of, you know, I never got to listen to his explanation of what the boss of the woods was or anything like that. It wasn't until years later, I was reading about Bigfoot and the different monikers he has. And there it was, Boss of the Woods. And all of a sudden, it all clicked. I was like, son of a gun. Because I remember the footprint.
Yeah.
Or my, you know, and he, and then I remember he spent a year in Alaska. So I can only imagine what he ran into out there.
So as you,
so that's kind of how it all started.
Yeah, as you started to get an interest in this, I'm not exactly sure how old you are, but I know that my first exposure to much of this was through a television show called In Search Of.
In Search Of?
Yeah.
With In Search Of, brother. Yeah. The Leonard Nimoy Bigfoot In Search Of is, yes, on my favorites in my YouTube channel. Yes. And when I start feeling a little lost for wear or a little worse for wear and feeling like I'm not going anywhere with this, or I don't have enough research, or it's just kind of stagnant, I watch that because it always inspires me.
It's fantastic.
That was honestly, In Search Of is probably, I've got to say, it's probably a landmark show for anyone invested in the cryptids or the paranormal or the supernatural. I think Leonard Nimoy probably did more for us than he did as Spock, being the host of In Search Of.
I think that's a fair assessment, and I cannot tell you the number of people who are now rather accomplished in their field, whatever it happens to be, and there are many fields that this touched on, who cite In Search Of as being the beginning of their interest. Seeing,
you know, what's funny is I've been trying to get that theme for like a phone ringer for years. I just can't get the recording right.
That's cool. And they've just recently resurrected that program with a different host. And I tried to watch it a couple times, and I just can't get my arms around it. For some
reason. It's not the same. And our mutual friend was on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was happy to watch it for him. But the truth of the matter is, it just wasn't the same. And I think Zachary Quinto, he did a good job, but he's not Spock, you know?
Yeah, he's not. And the other thing is that, you know, Leonard Nimoy, when he hosted the program, he didn't make the program wasn't about him. He just narrated it.
Yeah. But his voice, you know, it's just, again, anything he did was just awesome. I was a huge Leonard Nimoy fan. I'm an old Trekkie. I used to, when I was a kid growing up, we didn't have cable because they didn't have it, so we just had the old rabbit ears.
Sure, yeah.
And there was very few things I could watch on, like, TV. One of them was the old school Doctor Who with Tom Baker, who's a hero of mine, my personal hero, Tom Baker, the old doctor. It's funny because I've got a signed picture of him on my desk right now. And In Search Of, and the old Star Treks, and, like, the original TV show Buck Rogers.
Isn't it amazing that when you only had three or four channels to choose from, in some cases maybe a half dozen channels to choose from, you could always find something to watch. Now we have 500 channels to choose from, and we can never find anything to watch.
You know what's really funny as you say that is my wife and I, you know, we have a good-sized place, and we've got the computers and the TVs, and we were just last week, we canceled the cable because we had all these channels.
Yeah.
It was all the same stuff, and all we do anyways watch Netflix. So it's I'm like, do you want to even do this? And she's like, nope, cancel it. So the boss said cancel it, and we canceled it.
That's the way. It's the way of the world. This cord cutting thing is real, and it is it's happening at a faster and faster pace. So as you started to develop this interest, and you took it from more than just a casual curiosity to something that you spend a great deal of time with, do you consider yourself more of a field investigator or an academic researcher or a theorist or all of the above?
What we do is we call ourselves cryptid and paranormal detectives. And here's why. Because we do the research first, and then we do the investigating. Mm-hmm. So we do both. We're both academic and boots on the ground types. And here's why I say that. When we go, we have several, for lack of a better phrase, hotspots that we check out on separate times and different times of the year, because I have a theory about their migration patterns. And it's been pretty accurate over the last couple of years. But what we do is we research that area. What was it 100 years ago? Who owned it?
Right.
What happened there? And we do that not only with the cryptid, but the paranormal. When someone has, like, okay, hey, I think our house is haunted, before we even go there, we go back as far as we can in the historic record. We pull original deeds. We look up the owner. I mean, we spend hours, countless hours, researching things because we want to know our stuff. You know, I had a dear friend tell me, he goes, if you want to be in this industry, you better know your stuff. because the second you don't know it, someone's going to call you on it, and you're going to look like a schmuck. So always know your stuff. So if you can go into like a an area and know more about that area than the owners or the park rangers or the people that live out there, you're doing good, because you have an idea of what was here, what once, you know, thrived in this area, how it kind of got to be where it is, and what used to be hunted here, things like that. Like, we'll go in there and see if there was ever, you know, specific areas like of elk or deer, things like that. Just because if we know that, then we know there's a food source, and then, you know, if there's a food source, then there's probably a predatorial source, things like that. So it all kind of falls into place. Am I making myself clear on that, or am I just kind of stuttering or mumbling?
No,
because I just want to.
That makes sense. Sure, that makes sense. You keep using.
So it's,
go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Finish.
In other words, if you know as much as possible about every specific thing you get involved with, I think the better off you are.
You keep saying we. I know you have a group and a team.
Yeah.
What's your team made up of? How many people? And
it varies. I've probably got 12 members, but I do most of my investigation with my buddy. His name's Tiny. Tiny's an interesting character. If you were to catch a Bigfoot, shave him, and put glasses on him, that's what Tiny looks like. I think his mama was in the woodshed with a Sasquatch, but I won't say it to his face because it won't kill me.
Okay.
he's one of the greatest guys there in the world. He's actually paranormally gifted. I have been in paranormal situations where I've actually seen dark entities just disappear from him. I mean, he comes in the room, they vanish. I mean, they'll go to the four corners. I've seen it. So he's kind of gifted. He's not like an empath, but he's very supernaturally sensitive. And he's also from Eastern Tennessee. And if you can get the guy to wear shoes, you're lucky. So it's just I've got an amalgamation of people I work with, and I'm a very blessed man.
Does the team change depending on what the target of the investigation is?
Sometimes. But mostly, you know, if we need more people, there's always people I can call. And I'm very lucky in the fact that I'm affiliated with different organizations in different states that I'm very close with. So one of my issues that I've been having, though, is when I started Asheville Cryptid Paranormal Society, I didn't think that I would get phone calls from outside of this area, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And what's been happening, and I feel like I'm very blessed, and it has nothing to do with me. It's the people that I'm around, and I think the people that I've been able to help. But word of mouth is a wonderful thing. And we get people from all over the country wanting help. And one of the few things they tell me is, you know, I wasn't sure if I could call you because it said Asheville Cryptid Paranormal.
Right.
So what we're going to do is we're going to keep Asheville Cryptid Paranormal is one of the names, but we're going to put that under the umbrella of American Cryptid Paranormal, and we're in the process of doing that. But I'm always going to have Asheville Cryptid Paranormal on something. It's just going to be under the umbrella of American Cryptid Paranormal. We're probably just going to put that on the website just so people know that we're not just located in one area. But, again, it's just been one of those things where last week I was getting phone calls from upstate New York.
Oh, really?
About some issues. So, I mean, it's been one of those things. So again, I feel very, very, very fortunate. But no reason why I say that, just to let people know that if they ever find us and you see American Cryptid Paranormal, it's still the same organization. It's just going to be an umbrella name we're going to use.
We're going to run out of time here in just a few minutes, and then we're going to have you back Thursday night, and we're going to pick up on a lot of the topics that we haven't talked about. But I need to know. You mentioned having had a dogman sighting. Let's save that for Thursday. How about Bigfoot sightings? Have you had any personal encounters with Bigfoot?
I have not, but I have been growled at to the point where, and I don't want to sound vile or disgusting, but I had a little bit of a chest cold, but I got growled at, and the growl was so forceful that it actually loosened phlegm in my chest. We had just found a 21.5-inch by 11-inch footprint, and they were 6.5, 7 feet apart, and we were following that up a hill. If you go on my website, AstralCryptidAndParanormalSociety.com, you'll see the pictures. The one thing we do is we post everything we find, and it's one of these things, this is possible evidence, you decide. You know, it's I don't ever tell anyone, hey, this is definitely what it is, because there's that small possibility it's something else. But that was a time where I think I was running into one, and if I hadn't stopped and turned around, I think it would have probably been a bad situation for me. So I have not physically seen one, no, but I have been growled at. And then I got the opportunity to be on a TV show with a guy named Cliff Simon. He's got a new TV show out, and for life, I can't think of the title. Into the Unknown, something like that. But we did some filming, and we got infrasound, we got screamed at, we had things being, getting thrown in our general direction, and that was another pretty much close call. But that feeling you get when you know that there's just a much bigger presence out there than you, that's very humbling. And you may not have to, you don't have to have it in your sights to know it's there. Does that make sense?
It does. A question has scrolled through chat a couple times here, and I just want to make sure I ask it before I forget it. We had talked about the different types of Bigfoot. You classified them, Patty, type 2, type 3. Are there books on that particular topic that you're aware of? Anything you recommend?
Well, you know, yes, there are. There's Us and Them. There's a book called Us and Them. And that's a book about, you know, different relic hominins and the possible missing link. I am a firm I like Jeff Meldrum, Dr. Jeff Meldrum. His books are very good. And you know, he's world renowned Sasquatch guy. I don't know if he goes by the moniker expert or not, but he's a very well known. He's a professor of I think locomotion in Iowa State. Bipedal locomotion in primates, and he's really good. I get a lot of my research from old newspaper articles, and realistically, the best research or the best way to find research on cryptids, and this is once more, this is just my opinion, is Native American folklore. The Native Americans have been in this country for 14,000 years. They have learned how to deal with these creatures. They have different names for these creatures. They know what they have to do to thrive and survive with these creatures. So only a fool does not listen to the Native Americans when it comes to dealing with the unknown. And that would be a definite blanket statement. I definitely believe that. I think if the information that the Native Americans have on cryptids is just the best resource there is. So that's where I get most of my information. And I'm very lucky because I've had some friends that have been very forthcoming with information for me.
How active is the area you're in, the Asheville, North Carolina area, with regards to cryptid activity?
It's pretty active. I think we had 19 reports last year.
Are they all Bigfoot or other things as well?
No. There was about, it was probably 11 Bigfoot, 8 Dogman.
Oh, really? That many Dogman?
I have a lot of Dogman reports up here. I'm a firm believer. We can talk about this Thursday. We can talk about the migration patterns. Yeah, and I also have a cryptid cave theory. There's a cave system, and I believe that cryptids use that a lot.
Just a quick question here about this cave system. Does it have anything to do with the Mammoth cave system?
Yes, it does, because I think they're all connected.
Interesting. Okay, that'll be great for
you,
a discussion.
Our mutual friend, Joshua P. Warren, he actually got me started thinking about that about 5 years ago.
Really?
You know, Josh is one of those guys where he just kind of, he's one of those guys, like when I have a problem or something like this, I ask him, I'm like, what do you think of this? And he's like, he's got that ability to look at things from that different lens and give you that clear thought process.
Yeah.
So, again, that's just another reason why I feel so blessed and lucky. Is just I've been able to have such great people around me and helping me out. And it's like, I feel very, very honored to be on your show because you know you've got a great show and you always have cool guests, and it's just kind of cool to be on this end. So I do thank you very much for having me.
Well, you've given a lot of great perspective, and of course I don't have to mention it again, but I will. We appreciate you coming on last minute, but we are going to have you back Thursday. We're going to get into a lot more than this. We've basically stuck to the Bigfoot conversation tonight, but you've got a lot more to talk about, and we'll open up those topics Thursday night when we have you back on and we've got the full show with you.
Definitely. I'm looking very forward to it.
In the meantime, people want to learn more about what you're up to and maybe do a little homework before Thursday night's show. Where would they go?
Everything is on our website. It's Ashford Crypto. Sorry, it's late. Astral Cryptid and Paranormal Society.com. We also do a podcast called Beyond Fringe, and all of the podcasts are on the website. A lot of our information's on the website. Our bios are on the website. You can see pictures of Tiny, and you guys can tell me if he doesn't look like a Bigfoot with a haircut or not. So you tell me what you think.
Sounds
good. Feel free to email us or contact us. Our phone number is 828-407-0046. And if you guys have a story or if anyone needs any help or you have any questions, feel free to contact us.
That's perfect. Christian, thanks so much for being here. We will talk to you not tomorrow night, but the night after. Looking forward to that, too.
I am looking forward to it. Thank you again so much for having me. I'm honored.
We're going to go to our phone lines. This is somebody who used to call all the time, who we haven't had in a while, and I think it's the amazing Faki. Is this the amazing Faki? Is it?
Hello, Jason, JV?
Yeah, it's JV. Jason isn't here, Faki.
Oh, is that why you called me?
I didn't call you. In fact, it was you that called me, Faki.
Well, I keep hearing you having psychics on the show, and mm-hmm. I realized I hadn't been on in a while, so I thought I would schedule myself to come on.
You were going to schedule yourself by calling into the show? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Isn't that what all of your featured special guests do?
Well, the special guests we actually put on the calendar, and we set it up ahead of time, and we make sure...
Anyway, I had put a notice on InstaSnap, I had people send you questions for me to do readings tonight. Did you get those?
Oh, wait a minute. I wondered why Slick Eddie was getting all those emails. In fact, we didn't really know what it was about.
So I'm here to do a few of those readings.
So wait a minute. You want me to read these questions?
Yeah. Yes, JV. Yes, please. I thought you were a professional.
Right. Okay. Slick, do we have those on the screen? Can you pull them up here for me? Just a couple. We're not going to do a ton of them. All right. Well, I guess we'll try doing this for you, Faki. But this is kind of unusual. Normally you have to set this up in advance. So let's see. Let's go with the first one here. And I'm reading it, and it says this is from Janet. And Janet is in New Mexico, and it reads, I lost my job as part of the lockdowns. Will I ever get called back to work after this is all over?
Let's see. My guides tell me outlook not so good.
Outlook not so good. That's it? That's the reading? That's what you're going to do?
Yes. Do you have another one for me, JV?
Okay. This one's from, let's see here. This is Tom in Illinois. And Tom says, we lost our family dog last week, and we can still feel his presence. Can you tell me if Harper, that's the name of the dog, is still around us because it feels as though he is?
Let's see. My guides tell me, ask again later.
What?
Next.
No, wait. Ask again later?
JV, I can't control what the guides tell me.
I know you can't. Well, all right. By the way, just before we get to do the next one, what's that noise I keep hearing, like something shaking, like before you do each reading? What's that noise?
What noise?
The one that I hear before you do the readings. Each time I hear it. I've heard it both times.
That's my magic ebony spirit guide communication sphere. Come on, JV, let's do another one. Hurry up.
Magic ebony spirit guide communication sphere. All right. Listen, we'll do one more, Faki. This one is from Sylvia in Florida. And it says, my family is spread out all over the world. My son is in Alaska, and my daughter and her husband are in England. I have a sister who lives in Costa Rica, and my husband is deployed in the Middle East. I'm concerned about all of them for different reasons. Can you tell me if everyone will be safe and will we be reunited sometime during 2020? If not all at the same time, will I at least be able to see them individually?
Let's see. My guides say outlook not so good.
You've already done that. That one's already done.
Well, hang on. Let me try again. Let's see. My guides say don't count on it.
Don't count on it.
Well, hang on. Let me try again.
It seems a bit...
outlook not so good.
Yeah, we did that a couple of times. I mean,
hold on. you may rely on it.
You may rely on it.
JB, this has exhausted me. You know how much energy I expend when I do these readings.
But you're the one.
I need to go. But remember, I'm always here for you. I'm the amazing Faki.
Yeah, but Faki, you're the one that wanted to do this. We didn't. Hello? Faki? Well, I don't know. It's never normal when we get a call from the amazing Faki, but we haven't heard from him in quite some time. It was a little bit of a surprise to hear from him tonight.
Beyond Reality Paranormal is hosted by JV Johnson and produced by Orion Palmer and Slick Eddie Edwards. Like us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Please consider supporting the program either through your podcast platform, click on the link in the description, or on Patreon at Joha Productions. If you'd like to be a guest on Beyond Reality Paranormal or you have a recommendation for a guest, contact our producer, Slick Eddie Edwards. Eddie is spelled with a Y at slickeddieedwards@gmail.com.